allies, and anybody that wants to learn more about the LGBT plus community. My name is Zanardi, and I'm so glad all your beautiful faces are here. My guest today. Wow, I cannot say enough good things about him. John Voltoro. He is the founder of VoltoroCoaching.com. That's V-O-L-T-U-R-O, coaching.com. And he is an executive coach. He works with many, many different big companies and their executives. He works with a lot of LGBT people as a life coach and helping them in their journey and in their life. And I thought we had a great conversation, maybe one of the best. We talked a lot about things that I wasn't too familiar with. We talked specifically about the LGBTQ plus people in the workplace and this pay gap. There is an LGBT pay gap that we talk about. We talk about consciously marketing to the LGBT community. How can brands, you know, market that Rainbow Pride shirt, which, by the way, just go on www.thealphabetmafia.com and support a Pride brand. We also talk about the corporate involvement in Pride. Has corporations gone too far? Is Pride nothing more than a capitalist free-for-all fest? Ladies and gentlemen, everyone in the middle and on the outskirts of the spectrum, give it up for John Voltoro. John, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what you do, things like that.
Yeah, so my name is John Voltoro, and I used to be an executive in corporations and startups, and I left that world a few years ago to become an executive coach. So today I spend a lot of my time with executives who want to get ahead, who want to kind of balance life and work. And I do have a practice focusing specifically on the LGBT population. I have always been an out person at work and kind of made a lot of mistakes, and I feel like that's avoidable. And if there's a way to give back to the community, it's through the coaching I do with them.
Mm. So you said you were an out person at work. Does that mean you when did you come out?
So it's a good question. I don't think I ever was really in. I always kind of think about it from the perspective of I was really naive. I grew up in New York City, and I was really naive to the fact that there were like straight people and gay people back then. And I just was my kind of quirky little self, and people just described me as emotional and, you know, activated easily. And, you know, I think I was just feeling things out. So when it got to junior high school, I started feeling like, oh, I'm attracted to men. And then when I got to high school, I really kind of felt like, you know, I think I might be gay, but I'm not really sure. So I dated both men and women, or boys and girls at that age. And it was at that time, like when I was 16, I got my first boyfriend who was 4 years older than me. And that's how I actually ended up in college. I come from a family where I was the first person to go to college. And so I left Brooklyn, went to college, and was exposed to the whole gay world. And from there, I just didn't really go back. And as a result of it, experienced a lot of interesting discrimination, harassment, mm-hmm. that I didn't even realize that's what it was back then. But, you know, clearly it was when you look back at it. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I would say I was kind of always out because I was naive about it. But I also feel like it really helped me to get places and kind of almost pave the way for other people who were coming up.
Sure, absolutely. And for context, not to date you or anything, but what was this? When was this time when you were experiencing the world as a gay man and some of this discrimination?
Yeah, so sure. It was the late 80s, early 90s. So I had gotten out of college, and, you know, I worked at a media company in New York City. So, you know, when you think about that, you would think really super liberal, but no, there were out gay people there, and they were made fun of on a daily basis, multiple times a day. And the things that I heard people say about them, people said the most vicious things. And I remember thinking, you know, I'm not going to not be out, but I'm also not going to talk too much about myself. And my first summer there was really an interesting time because I became friends with these two women, really close friends. They're older than me. I was the youngest. I graduated from college really early, and I was the youngest of all the new kind of hires by 6 years. And I was sitting at the kitchen table and the, you know, in the cafeteria, and a gay guy who was very open walked by, and one woman commented on what he does with his body, you know, sexually compared to like what, you know, non-LGBT people do with their bodies. And I just thought, oh man, how am I going to handle this? And the next day I just was, I sat them down at the same table and I said, got to tell you something. When you said that, it made it really clear that you have no idea about me, but I am a different flavor of what he is, right? Like he is out and proud in who he is. I'm still kind of like, you know, quiet, but out and still proud. So, you know, that really opened up their eyes to kind of the stereotypes they had in their mind. And basically that's been my experience for most of my career, which is why I feel so compelled to break down barriers, you know, because people don't realize the kind of like the insidious little things that they do that reinforce negative stereotypes or even the biases they have within themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this thing, I'm sure you're familiar with implicit bias and just how people can have a bias without even realizing that they're being biased. So that was kind of the first interaction you had that kind of led you on this journey of activism. Do you like that word? I know some people do, some people don't, but of this journey of fighting for LGBT equality and specifically in the workplace, did you, after that conversation, initial conversation, did you experience more discrimination in that same work environment, or did things drastically kind of end? Was that really something that was effective immediately?
Yeah, it's so interesting that you asked that. It actually got worse. I don't know that people's behaviors changed so much, but it made everybody aware of what was happening. And so at the lowest of importance were like the LGBT people there. You know, there was, I worked for somebody who was a lesbian who was really in the closet, very, very scared of being out of the closet. So she and I had a very tense relationship because I represented something that she didn't, you know, she wasn't ready to do. And it's interesting what happened to me there was the first time I realized that I was not going to go anywhere in my career because people thought of me as the gay guy first. And it got me thinking about how do I overcome those stereotypes that exist about me? And, you know, the answer for me at that point was to get an MBA. And I didn't really want to get an MBA. I want to be super clear about that. It wasn't that I didn't like the idea of getting one because that's what people did to get ahead back in the early 90s. But I felt like I could have done something different, you know, but everything I did came with a stigma of some sort. And the thing that people value, you know, in New York City in the 90s was an MBA. And if you worked at a big company, they wanted, the only way you'd get ahead is if you had that differentiator. And I thought, well, if I did that, maybe people would not look at me as the gay guy. They would look at me as the guy who has the MBA, who has potential to grow. So my first company was when I realized there was a rainbow ceiling. I couldn't go any further in the group that I was in. I was low level, but I knew then that that was going to be my truth. So went to school for a couple of years, went back to New York, tried to get a job at that same company. This was a good company. It was Showtime, the cable channel. And loved the people overall. I just wanted to get ahead and I didn't want to be, you know, pigeonholed or stigmatized because of my sexuality. That was just one piece of me. It's a very important piece of me. It defines me, but it's not the thing that helps companies to get ahead. It's all the other things in addition to that, that help the companies get ahead. And that's what I wanted them to focus on.
Wow. So I like that word rainbow ceiling. I've actually haven't heard of it. Obviously we know, you know, what that is when we say like the glass ceiling or whatever. I'm talking about, you know, women in the workplace or just whatever. So rainbow ceiling, what in your definition of that, why did it exist? And what was the ceiling? Like meaning you're not going to become an executive. You're not going to be the star because you're too gay. Like kind of just dive more into what that means, the rainbow ceiling.
Yeah. You know, so it's a little bit of all that. I think mostly for me, it was we don't want somebody like you representing our company. And if you are at a significant level, you will be out there talking to people who help us to get more business. And if they have biases, then that is going to hurt our business overall. And that really is why executives in this country, probably across the world, are closeted still. You know, when you look at the statistics, most executives, very small number, are out. You know, we hear about, you know, folks like, you know, Tim Cook, who runs Apple, and others who have like real significance, but they can do whatever they want to do. They just achieve such a level of success that they could do. And they were out only after they achieved that success. So there are a lot of people like me who wish they had somebody to help them kind of pull them up. So for me, it was all about getting to a place where I felt comfortable with myself at work and knowing that I did everything I possibly could do, and then also having a filter for the types of companies that would allow me to grow to the highest level within them. You know, when you're told, like I was over and over again, well, you're not necessarily the kind of person who we'd want to have out doing X, Y, or Z. You know, it really starts to impact your psyche, and you become a fighter, you know, because you don't want people to put that first.
Yeah, absolutely. So it just sounds like they were kind of just saying, like, we don't want you to be that. When a client calls, we don't want you to answer the phone because we don't want our company to be thought of as the gay company or whatever, or the company that has a bunch of gay people, which is terrible, obviously. And when you were getting hired and looking for jobs and going through that process, did you face any discrimination? I mean, I don't know if they could tell you were gay. I don't know, but did you face discrimination?
Yeah, I did. I a couple of times explicit during the hiring process, because, you know, as soon as social media started, as soon as LinkedIn started in particular, I did not hide that I was, you know, the volunteer coordinator for the Human Rights Campaign. And if anybody knows the Human Rights Campaign, or if they just look at the little bio, they're going to know that it's about equality for the LGBTQ population. So little things like that really do influence whether or not you get a call or whether or not somebody asks you certain types of questions. And the certain types of questions I got were often things like, well, how out are you, you know, or how comfortable are you being in an environment where, you know, everybody is more traditional and conservative? Or do you know that you're going to be working with people who are from, you know, a state in the Midwest who might not have the same values as you? Is that going to be a problem for you? You know, so it was always the problem for me. And that's another piece of the puzzle. Like when I'm doing my diversity, equity, inclusion work, and when I'm doing LGBT inclusivity and diversity work too, you know, the onus really isn't on the marginalized population. It's on the other folks, the allies, to help bring us up. But that's the way it's starting to become today. Back when I was doing this, we didn't really talk about that.
Sure. Absolutely. And so I want to talk about career mobility being a gay. I know we kind of touched on how there was a rainbow ceiling. Has that started to change now versus when you were in New York at this ad agency? Is there more career mobility available? Is this rainbow ceiling being shattered? I know you said Tim Cook and things like that, but those are just outliers, as a lot of people are still closeted. But is it starting to shift, you think? Are we moving in the right direction?
I think certain industries have always been a little bit more, you know, progressive. So I think in those industries, and maybe in those industries in their headquarters, wherever they reside, you know, you might see a little bit more of a shift. And but the truth is that 50% of the population basically is still in the closet. So it's not working for everybody, and it's not working in all industries equally. So the discrimination really affects people differently. And that's just sad because, you know, LGBT people doing work across the board. So we're in every industry. We shouldn't be held back for any reason just because we're, you know, identify as LGBT. So the question has always been for me, how do we enable people to safely move through? Like you're talking about mobility. That's like the critical piece of this, because not only is it mobility within your company, but it's mobility to leave your company to go to someplace that might be a better fit for you. And hey, what happens if that fit happens to not be in a state that has LGBT rights, you know, built into it, because we don't have federal rights protecting us at the workplace. So like there are 26 states where, you know, you can get fired. 26 states where it's legal, but 24 states where it's not. And it's sometimes it's sexual identity, and sometimes it's sexual identity and gender identity, and sometimes it's just sexual identity without gender identity. So it's a patchwork of laws that create just confusion for people. And I can tell you, I live in California. It would be really hard for me to move to a state that I knew wouldn't care for my family legally the way that California does. And sure. I've had opportunities I've had to turn down. So the mobility is really restricted. And I think it's a great question, because nobody really talks about the piece of the mobility that restricts LGBT people from earning as much as they possibly can. And sometimes that means you need to leave your company and leave your state to go someplace else.
So is that because I know on your website, you have a blog, johnvolterocoaching.com.
Voltoro Coaching.
Voltoro Coaching. That's right. Yeah, I wanted to shout that out for you. So thank on VolteroCoaching.com, you do have a blog about the LGBT pay gap. And so for the audience listening, is that what you are kind of referencing? Is that it's not necessarily a pay gap to their peer that's sitting right next to them, but it's this ability to move jobs or to change locations that is restricting them from getting their pay that they could be getting, their maximum amount or whatever.
It's both, right? It's a little bit pretty complex problem, because you might not want to leave your company. There's so many great companies in this nation that are really great for people to work at. But you might have restrictions on your mobility compared to your non-LGBT pair with similar qualifications, which is what I was writing in the Gay Pay Gap. And then the other piece of it is you might have the very real challenge of not being able to move to another state. I have a friend who got amazing opportunity to leave California to go to Texas, but he's a same-sex couple, two men with two kids. They didn't do it for that reason, because there are no, you know, laws on the books to protect people there. So sometimes you miss out on it, and that means over time, like your whole lifetime, when you're measuring your wages, they're going to be less than your non-LGBT counterparts. And that might be okay for some people, and it might not be okay for others. But regardless, we have to, you know, stand up to the laws that exist and say, like, we could do better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'll be blunt about it. It's ridiculous that you can get fired or your job's jeopardized because you're transgender or gay or whatever.
Right.
And so you're a life coach, and you work with a lot of LGBT clients. Have you ever worked with someone, obviously you can't tell specifics or name names, but have you ever worked with someone who actually did get fired because they were gay or similar to that situation?
Not fired, but someone who, multiple people who are really feeling like being LGBT prevents them from getting their boss's job when their boss moves to the next level, and then helping them craft a transition plan out of the company. That's more common for the clients that I have. I'm more of a like an executive, like a leadership coach. So I see more of it from the business side impact. But to your point, like a lot of what we do as coaches is we're coaching the whole person. So there's a life component to it. And like where that becomes really important is that you're one person, whether you're at work or home, you know, and you want that person to feel good no matter where you are.
Absolutely. And so you work with the leadership side of businesses. I want to talk about marketing to LGBT folk and the corporate involvement in Pride, if we can kind of blend those two topics, or we can break them down individually. But how, in your opinion, how do you work with executives who are wanting to market to the LGBT community without overstepping things or making it come off as inauthentic and they're just chasing dollars? What's that strategy going in with those executives when you go to talk to them?
Yeah, it's a good question, because it's not easy. And, you know, so when I put on my marketing hat for that, it's really about understanding what need the product solves for the consumer, and then really making that be the foremost piece of the message, and then using images that are relatable to the audience, and then finding the right channel to meet those consumers where they are. So like when you think about a brand like IKEA, who really wants to help young LGBT people furnish their first apartment together, you know, you're seeing ads where the print ads, TV ads, where they're showing, you know, two men or two women in a home situation. And like, that's kind of like the difference today is, you know, targeted LGBT media is shrinking. So you have to find people where they are in other channels. And because everything's so fragmented, we can target. It's more expensive, of course, but the idea is that we do exist, and you just want the images to really support and be accessible and welcoming to the folks. And of course you want the language to be as inclusive as possible. That's a big piece that non-LGBT people make when they're writing copy. You know, so it's always great. Like, one of the things I always tell people is make sure that you have somebody who's part of the community reading your copy, because you don't know what you don't know. And you might say something that could be totally offensive. I'm sure I say things that are too offensive to the community. We're all works in progress, but if you're spending, you know, $1 million to create a commercial, you're going to get a lot of backlash if you don't do, you know, if you don't cross off all the important things on the list to make it as best as it possibly could be.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like that one of the keys, it sounds like, to marketing to the LGBT community, what we're moving towards is less, you know, less rainbows and yay, like we're gay and all this, but more just being wholesome and authentic about it by just having a gay couple be in the ad. Because we've all seen like brands do ridiculous things. Like I saw like Doritos, they were all like, they had like rainbow Doritos, which, I mean, I don't mind rainbow Doritos, but it just comes off a little tone deaf and inauthentic when that's like your thing that you're selling. It's like, why not just have a gay couple be eating Doritos together or something, you know, like,
right.
So is that, that's to kind of sum up what you were saying, that's kind of where that the businesses are going, or where they should go, is just representing gay couples by having them be there or having.
Yeah. You know, that's a good example of the Doritos. I didn't see that one, but you know, having rainbow Doritos, that's not what we normally do. We don't normally sit around eating rainbow Doritos. And I think that's right. Like, that's the piece that, you know, is when you're advertising and you're marketing, you're putting together a story, right? You want people to see how your brand fits into their lives. And unless it's like a big parade every day in your life, you know, I doubt you're going to be eating rainbow Doritos. So for me, it's more about like, be as authentic as you can to the brand and just make sure that all of the things around it talk to your audience. And this is for anything, right? Like, if we're advertising specifically to women, you know, we have a model for that. We have a template that's pretty proven. Let's make sure we have a really good one for the LGBTQ community, because we're just humans, just like everybody else, with the same types of needs. We all have, you know, homes for the most part. We all have, you know, dreams and aspirations and all the kind of trappings of daily life. So, yeah, like, speak to me in a way that is meaningful, first by solving my problems, and try to do it the best way you can so I can hear you through the clutter. And the way, because we're such a visual people, right? Like, the way you're going to do it is with really inviting images, not rainbow flags on a cruise, you know, stereotypes of us dancing around, you know, shirtless.
Right.
Because that's the way I grew up, you know, New York City. Like, it was always, oh, look at those gay people on the news. And, you know, it was the parade, or like people walking into the Monster Bar in the West Village, you know, when I was young. And I thought, wow, I guess I'm not gay because I don't look like that. You know, people are very impressionable. So, and that's why I think about, like you were talking about media, I think that's why Will and Grace was so important too. You know, Will, even though he's kind of like flamboyant in his own way, he looked like any other guy walking down the street. So you can kind of see him. And because it was TV, he was in your living room. He was invited in your living room every week. So you got to know him. So that's
true.
Trust.
And I do want to talk about gay men being portrayed on TV versus the reality. But before that, I want to thank you all so much for listening and talk about problem solving. Man, do I have a problem solved for you. Our sponsor today is Manscaped. Manscaped is here to make sure your balls are smooth while you or your partner are playing with them. That's right. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. You know when you're going down on your partner and you get a mouthful of hair, or worse, you're shaving yourself and you cut your balls and there's blood everywhere and you're starting to freak out because you're afraid your balls are going to fall out? Well, guess what? That doesn't have to happen anymore thanks to Manscaped. This third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. And listen, everybody, this is not bullshit. I was hesitant to take a deal. I didn't want to start advertising, and Manscaped was kind enough to send me a bunch of free products. They said, just try it out, see what you think, and I am loving it. I cannot advocate for it enough. If you are a man and you have balls, you should have Manscaped. It makes trimming down there so much easier, so much more stress-free, and even fun almost. So do yourself and your balls, and your partner probably, a favor, and head on over to manscaped.com. Use code GAYFAM for 20% off and free shipping. Wow, free shipping, kind of just like the Alphabet Mafia. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code GAYFAM. Again, that's code GAYFAM at manscaped.com. Treat your balls, treat yourself. You deserve it. I do want to talk about gay men being portrayed on TV versus the reality. Obviously, you know, in 2020, we have way more gay characters and gay representation than we had just even 10 years ago. But is there a dark side to representation? And, like, can it be harmful? For me off the bat, like, just thinking of one way it can be harmful is by putting people in the box or stereotyping the characters. Like, you see on a lot of sitcoms, their gay character is just a cut and paste of, haha, look, it's the funny side gay character. He's gay. That's why it's funny, you know? Yeah. So what can we do? What can TVs do, TV companies or TV shows do to make their characters more real, I guess, or make their gay characters live in a more reality, be more portrayed in a reality setting than, you know, this fictional, funny, gay character mm-hmm. setting.
Yeah. You know, it's such a hard question to answer, but I do think that, you know, if the time exists in the context, like, you know, within the sitcom, within the show, to really flesh out the other sides of the character, mm-hmm. that's what makes people relatable. They want to mm-hmm. see people vulnerable and emotional and who look like them. And, you know, to your point about, here he is, the door opens and he's making some sort of a sarcastic remark and it's very stereotypical and he's wearing like the, you know, the gay garb. there's so much more behind what got him to that door, right? And we don't often see that. And it would be great to have more fully fleshed out, developed characters who happen to be LGBT. And mm-hmm. like that would be really refreshing to me to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I know we are moving towards it. We can slowly, some people say too fast, but we're moving very, in my opinion, we're moving in the right direction towards getting more representation and more just and right representation. Because, you know, as we said, the wrong representation can be harmful as well. Or not even harmful, but, you know, just a wrong portrayal. Mm-hmm. Talking more about going back to Pride, in your opinion, is Pride too corporate? Just in your opinion, has it lost its meaning through all these rainbows and sponsorships that we see? Has it diluted the meaning of it?
If I'm being totally honest with you, mm-hmm. I grew up in a time when the corporate sponsorship was limited, and I grew up in New York City, so like I was there for a lot of the gay prides and. They don't feel like they're part of the community. They feel like they're just basically trying to sell us things because they think we have a lot of money. And mm-hmm. their involvement, while I believe to be very authentic, like these are companies that definitely have employee resource groups and doing a lot for the community. I think they are showing up in many ways because they feel like that is part of their commitment. So it's like checking that box for them. I do think they could probably do a better way to be there and not be so forcefully commercial. Because I think that's the part that is really missing. This used to be, like, Pride meetings and celebrations used to be about the people getting together in a really safe, cool place and celebrating who they are. There's a piece of that that still exists, but there's, like, this big kind of filter over it now, which is go pay $15 for a drink and put your wristband on to go into that tent. And it wasn't always that way for folks who are listening to this. It was actually super fun and enjoyable, and you didn't feel like you were being accosted by ads at every turn. The pro of it is that it's safer because there's a lot more media attention. There's a lot more people who are protecting us while they're there. So there's, like, the pros and cons, but I liked it when it was a little bit more intimate.
Sure.
Yeah.
Was Pride in the 80s or 90s, just in that time, was it, because it's going to segue into kind of our next topic, was it as naked and like everyone just wearing no clothes and everyone showing off their abs? Was it like that in the 80s and 90s as well? Like, has that part evolved at all or changed?
It was naked.
There was a lot of it.
I mean, like, in New York City, they had pier parties, right? So once you got onto the pier and you went to the parties, or even if you were marching, the parade in New York City would start off with women on motorcycles. They used to call them the dykes on bikes, if you've heard of that. And they were, like, topless, you know, and that kind of set the stage for what was about to happen. And, you know, there was a lot of it, but it was, like, freedom of expression more than, like, nudity as sexual expression. It was just, like, freedom to shed off all of the clothes that we wear to camouflage ourselves to be safe. And that was the way I always interpreted it. And I took off my shirt. I wore a bathing suit like most people did. It was always sunny and hot in New York. And, you know, I think that's where that came from. I think the sex culture thing, you know, ebbs and flowed. You know, I came out during the period of time where HIV and AIDS was, you know, ravaging the communities. So it wasn't something that was as wild as things are today with PrEP.
Sure. Yeah. And so kind of going on both those, Truvada. So one of the things that kind of inspired me or got me thinking more about this corporate involvement in Pride and the corporate takeover, if you will, of Pride, was I read something that Truvada or the pharmaceutical company that makes Truvada, I'm blanking on that name, that makes PrEP, they spent like $10 million or some astronomical number on advertising at Pride in New York City. Meanwhile, you have people in New York City working minimum wage jobs, don't have great health insurance, and they're being sold Truvada for $1,200 a month, and they can't afford it. And now they're in danger, you know. And it's this tone deafness from the pharmaceutical company, because it's like you're spending an astronomical amount of money advertising at Pride, yet there's many individuals walking in that Pride parade that can't afford your product, and that, you know, it costs $1,200 here and it costs $30 in Australia. That kind of made me mad when I read that and kind of started this whole thinking of like, what are these companies doing advertising to the LGBT community? They're just dollars that they're chasing, you know? So I don't know where I was going with that, but I did want to bring that up, that it was very annoying to see that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great example, actually, of basically not caring about the actual people on the ground and whether or not they can use your products in a safe way, which would mean like taking that and taking it consistently. And if it's too expensive, they can't do it. And, you know, a lot of those companies, pharmaceuticals, will get you hooked on something, you know, and in this case, it's the ability to freely express yourself sexually with other people, right, without gigantic fear of catching anything. So, yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for everybody. And I think what you're talking about is important, because for some people, they can't afford it, and the others, they can't. And it creates like a class distinction upon class distinctions that already exist for us.
Mm-hmm. It just creates more ripples and division in the community. So continuing on about divisions in the community, I want to talk about the masculine body image that is very prevalent in the gay community, especially amongst white and masculine acting gay men. Is this body image harmful? You know, the body image of 6 to 8 abs, minimal body hair, you know, perfect white teeth. Like, yeah, of course, we all are attracted to certain things. We all have our types and stuff. But is this harmful, the way that it's perpetuated and kind of put on a pedestal now? Like, it's just fact that it is put on a pedestal. Is this harmful, and how much? How much is it harming our community?
Well, I mean, I don't know any statistics on it, but I'll tell you kind of my feelings about it are that for many people, it probably is harmful because we as a group feel less than and feel different already. And within the community, when we see these kind of subcultures with very, you know, large presence, like the presence that you just described, it often makes people feel like they're not part of that, or they can't associate with, or they're less than. And, you know, so sadly, it happens in other communities, right? You see like body beautiful in advertising for non-LGBT people all the time, and for us too. And I feel like it was inevitable that it would happen. I think that when it's used as a weapon to isolate ourselves and to kind of quote unquote, I hate the word ghettoize, but like ghettoize people, then that's not healthy. That's not healthy. And you hear that a lot. Like I'll talk to friends who live in West Hollywood who say, I need to get away from here because I'm really tired of seeing, you know, muscular white guys walking around.
Sure. And,
you know, like it's not representative of the total society or us as a rainbow of different people.
Yeah. Do you work with, I mean, are a lot of, or are some of your clients, do they deal with that issue of just feeling, you know, not enough because of their body? Is that something that you commonly see? I know you're more professional coaching, but you know, as the life in general, as bringing it back to that wholeness, is that something you see?
Yeah, I mean, seriously do actually. And it's a good point because this is where image is so important, no matter who you are, right? Image is really important in the United States. And if you don't conform to a certain image, you're going to be excluded from whatever group you're in, or you're going to be disinvited from the party. And when you think about LGBT people in kind of like in totality, the feeling of not being invited or not being excluded is really a big part of who we are, because we're not invited to the same types of parties, you know, straight friends go to. We might not be part of the old boys network at work that gets us ahead. And so we do things to stand out. And I think sometimes, you know, some people just go to extremes. It's great if you really feel healthy and you're doing it for good reasons for yourself. But if you're doing it for reasons to fit in, then like we have to work on the other pieces inside of us as well. So I've worked with people mostly who want to look the part of the roles they want. And that was a problem with me back in my day, you know, when I first got a coach. So I often tell people, look the part, look who you want to look like and find the right place for you. Be who you are, be the most authentic version of you, be the healthiest version of you, no matter what that is, whether it's 8 abs or just 1 big ab, whatever it is.
Or a six pack.
You know, be healthy of mind and body. Because that's what people will feel energetically from you, right? Not everybody walks around at work with a t-shirt, and not everybody walks around in normal, you know, kind of around the street, you know, in a tank top.
Yeah.
So the body should be for you.
Okay. I really like that. That was kind of answered my next question. I was going to say, how do you train your clients to feel comfortable in your skin, or in their own skin? But that kind of answered, unless you want to add to that.
No, I think that's a big part. I mean, there's lots of like nuances to it, but getting somebody comfortable with the idea that being comfortable in my skin is most important, then you work with them to figure out what that looks like for them.
Yeah, and so it's reverse engineering it.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, because if you want to be healthy and feel comfortable, what does that mean to you?
I have a question going back to business related. What are your thoughts on putting pronouns on a resume? So whether you're cisgender and you know you or you're non-binary or you're trans, what, from a professional hiring standpoint, should you put a pronoun on a resume? Like if that came across your desk and you were the hiring manager, obviously you personally like wouldn't matter, but you work with a lot of businesses and executives. So what are your thoughts on that?
Such a good question. So here's the thing. Tons and tons of statistics show that if your resume lands on somebody's desk and it's clear that you are part of the LGBTQ community, you probably will not get callbacks as often as you would if you didn't have that on there. And that's been proven. The way they prove that is just by creating fake resumes and doing tests to a bunch of hiring managers across the country. So that's a sad fact of life. Here's the other side of it. If you really only want to work for a place that will call you, put it on your resume. Mm-hmm. I put it everywhere. Like, in fact, you know, I've been a chief marketing officer, general manager for companies that are public, private, startup, large, small. I always led with it with a recruiter who spoke to me. I said, very plainly, like, I'm in a same-sex marriage and I have two kids. My family is important to me. Will I fit in a company like this?
Mm.
Because if I didn't, I didn't want to be there. I don't want that psychic damage to be done to me consistently.
Right.
And it'll happen in the best of times because people, like you were saying earlier, have implicit kind of biases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want to work for a company that's, you know, gonna be discriminatory or have, you know, coworkers that are discriminatory. I guess if you are in very desperate need of a job right at that moment, you just need to get what you can take, don't do it because you're going to minimize your chances. But if you kind of have some flexibility, you know, you're chilling, put it on a resume or make it clear in the interview, because then if they do hire you, you know that you feel welcomed there and everything feels good. Do you have any advice for coming out to coworkers? I know you do on your website, volterocoaching.com. But for the listeners, if you could sum up a few bits of advice for coming out to coworkers, because I know a lot of people, including myself, when I was at my most recent job that I had a job in an office, and even I, who was out for a year and a half, 2 years, comfortable in my skin, was, you know, it's another coming out. You know, they say it gets easier, but does it really? Like, you're always, you know, you're coming out all the time, constantly.
All the time.
So even for someone like me, who is very comfortable, it was a little nerve-wracking. So what are your advice for people that want to come out at work or just tell their coworkers?
Yeah, so important that people understand, if they're in the closet and they're contemplating coming out at work, to make sure you have a group of allies who support you.
Mm.
And the way to find your allies is to listen to conversations, because you will hear how people just generally are in the world and their views about differences, diversity, equity, inclusion, once you start talking. So listen to people. The most important thing for people is to feel safe. So coming out might not be the right thing depending on where you work. If the culture is really harsh towards people who have differences, that might not be the right place for you. You might be there because you need to make the money. So really rethink whether or not you want to come out, because your safety is the most important thing. And when people are looking to come out, they find an ally. And then that ally works really in close concert with them to start making sure that the right language gets talked about at work. So, for example, you know, a leader at the office who goes to the HR group and says, you know what, we should have more inclusive policies for hiring and firing. You know, what would that look like if we did that? And those are the types of people who will lay the groundwork for you to come out. It's not something you could do in a day. You know, it's something that you want to make sure that it's a big decision. You want to make sure you feel safe. You want to make sure that your ability to do your job doesn't get impeded. That's why you're there. It's different depending on where you live, like we were talking about. It's not always going, once they find out, you're not protected. You know, so there are different legal issues for you too. So just make sure you go into it with your eyes wide open, but lead with your safety by finding allies, and have the ally be with you when you decide to do it.
Mm. That's very good advice. And finding the ally is, I talk about finding your rock. I mean, it's similar, Ally, just finding your rock, whether it's, you know, a mother, a friend, another gay friend, just finding that one person who, no matter what, will be supportive of you and be there for you. What would you tell your younger self in regards to your LGBT experience? What kind of advice would you give to your younger self?
You know what? I have to say, no one's asked me that question before. I ask that question a lot, so thank you for asking me.
Absolutely.
I would say, and I really mean this, be authentic to yourself. Do what you really want to do, and don't try to fit into boxes that are so uncomfortable that it's going to cause you long-term kind of psychic damage. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, don't fit in the boxes. That's a good one. I think that's because that's something that I think almost everyone has done at one point in their life. And some people do it way more often, but everyone has at least tried to fit in at one point, I think. It's just part of human nature, just walking into a room and not wanting to be the odd one out. Yeah. But I can attest to it that not being authentic is the easiest way to unhappiness.
Yeah, it's so true. And if you do it long enough, a lot of people don't even remember who they are. And all the layers of the onion need to be peeled back. And those people just really suffer emotional issues. And we already have mental health issues within our community. You know, so doing it as early as you possibly can and being yourself and doing it in a safe way, you know, probably, I'm not a doctor, but probably would avoid a lot of challenges that folks could have in the future.
Yeah, totally. Well, John, I really appreciate you for taking the time out of your day to come and talk to me. It was a great pleasure getting to hear from you. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you all so much for listening. You are all so beautiful and amazing. Make sure to check us out at www.thealphabetmafia.com. You can read our blogs there. You can support our brand. Get a sticker. Get yourself a sticker. That really helps us. It raises brand awareness. You put it on your water bottle. You put it on your laptop. It becomes more of a common thing seen around town. If you want to be featured on our YouTube show where I answer your DMs and emails regarding, you know, your situation you're in or needing advice, you can email us at info@thealphabetmafia.com. Again, that's info@thealphabetmafia.com. Just put in the headline LGBTQ+advice, something like that, and I will try and read it and then use it on the show. Of course, if you need serious help, you can visit the trevorproject.org or you can give them a call at 1-866-488-7386. If you are in need of serious help, please reach out to those people immediately. They will be more than happy to help in a tremendous way. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you have a beautiful morning, evening, whatever it is. Good night.